From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because truth matters and life matters more. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man, we pick up where we ended on our previous broadcast and present more of an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank is talking with Eric Castle, author of Animal Algorithms, Evolution, and the Mysterious Origin of Ingenious Instincts. Let's now join Hank and Eric Castle in their conversation.
That's the term that I use throughout the book, complex program behavior. And the reason is, again, I wanted to focus on certain kinds of behaviors that had a characteristic that indicated that there was some programming aspect to it that weren't just simple behaviors. So, for example, programmed infers that there's an aspect of the behavior that is, again, it's innate, and it means that it's involved not necessarily an algorithm per se. Then most of us tend to, well, I'm an engineer, so that's my background, but I tend to typically think of an algorithm as a computer algorithm. It's not just simply limited to a computer type algorithm or a piece of software code, but it could be other things beyond that. A specific example might be, in the case of the social insects, they have a number of decision algorithms. In other words, they have a large repertoire of behaviors that they perform in the social colony, but the control of that is done through, apparently, a number of decision algorithms that exist in their brain. In other words, they make a decision based on some environmental condition, like they need food, or they need to go search for a new nest or tend to the queen, et cetera. So there's a decision process involved there. And so that means there's some kind of an algorithm. We don't know what it is, but it's somehow helping that animal make a decision of, do I do behavior A, B, C, which one? So there's a choice involved. So that also meets the category of a complex algorithm.
We were talking earlier on about the Arctic tern, and I want to quote Darwin here, just as you do in the book, where Darwin says that a human being cannot on his first trial, let's say, make something like a canoe, but a beaver, on the other hand, can make a dam. A spider can make a wonderful spider web, and they can do it the first time. This is astonishing when you have an Arctic tern who can determine a navigation that's based on the magnetic field of the Earth. I mean, when you think about that, that's a mind blower, but that's pre-programmed. That's what you're talking about when you're talking about algorithms.
Yes, exactly. Again, these are algorithms that are all pre-programmed. Somehow they reside in, you know, neuroscientists would talk about this in terms of a neural network in the brain, which logically makes sense. At least as far as we know today, that's the most plausible explanation. So in other words, they are hardwired, these behaviors, from the moment that the animal is developed and is born. Not only is the, let's say it is a neural network and the brain is hardwired, but there's a lot of aspects to that that are pre-programmed as well. In other words, it's in some cases, specifically in reference to navigation ability, there's actually mathematics involved. Now, the animal is actually taking some piece of information, typically a sensor, like a magnetic sensor, for example, using that information and actually computing a navigation path. In other words, okay, I have some information, my sensor's telling me where true north is, for example, but I want to fly southwest. So there's a computation there that says, okay, I have a piece of sensor information. Now I have to compute where is my destination. So there's a number of different aspects of this that are well beyond our comprehension about how animals are doing all of that. Again, it particularly in regards to these insects like ants and bees, where they have such tiny brains.
And butterflies as well. One of the fascinating parts of your book is the explication of the monarch butterfly. I've often been fascinated, and I've talked in various lectures about butterflies. What happens when a caterpillar goes through metamorphosis? You have this incredible transformation that takes place where from the caterpillar, you now have a butterfly. The caterpillar has eyes that can distinguish between light and dark. The butterfly has a field of vision and color acuity that exceeds even that of a human being. The caterpillar doesn't have wings. The butterfly does. The caterpillar doesn't have a proboscis. The butterfly does. So you have this mysterious molecular mixture that's in the chrysalis, and out of that comes a butterfly. And it's absolutely astounding when you think about metamorphosis and how that has to be explained by the Darwinian evolutionary process. I mean, it seems impossible. It's one thing to explain the caterpillar and all of its complexities, but out of that you have metamorphosis in a butterfly.
Yes, and one of the mysteries about all that is the fact that essentially what you have is two entirely separate genomes. In other words, you have a genome that defines a caterpillar, and then you have a genome that defines the butterfly, but they all reside within the genome of the animal, and somehow or another there's a switch between which part of the genome is activated at some particular time. Yeah, the whole metamorphosis is a really big challenge for Darwinian evolution.
I love the fact that on the cover of your book, you have the loggerhead sea turtle. And I think this is really interesting to talk about the kind of ingenious built-in compass that a loggerhead turtle has.
Right. And the loggerheads are one of the animals that there's some research that's indicating that they have a particular unique ability for navigation. And that is, one of the big ways of distinguishing between different types of navigation is a navigation system where you're flying, or in the case of a turtle, you're swimming in a certain direction. So in other words, going east, west, etc., toward some general sense of direction. However, in the case of the loggerhead, and there's some lobsters that have this ability, there's an indication that they actually have a map sense. So in other words, typically when we think of a map, we think of a two-dimensional map, but it's based on latitude and longitude. So you're able to get a two-dimensional representation of space, and you can go from destination A to B based on the coordinates within that system. What's been found, and we didn't know until very recently, that some animals actually do have a capability that appears to be a form of a map sense like that. And the theory is, and there is some, again, some research indicating it's actually based on different aspects of the Earth's magnetic field. So in other words, typically when we think of the magnetic field of the Earth, we think of just a compass giving you north and south, you know, where the pole is located, for example. But the magnetic field actually has more information than that, because it depends on both the vertical and horizontal direction of the field. So as you move from one of the poles toward the equator, the vertical inclination changes. So it moves as you traverse between the equator and the pole. And so the theory is that these animals are actually able to use that information, and not only does it give you north-south information, but there's also some indication that because the Earth's magnetic field actually does vary geographically, there's a number of things that cause it to change slightly as you move, for example, over the ocean or near one of the continents. There's a lot of geometric anomalies. But the belief is that you can actually create a two-dimensional map based on that information. And that's what animals like the loggerhead sea turtle and some others appear to be using as a form of navigation, which is, again, this is something a few years ago nobody thought was even theoretically possible, but now there's some research indicating, yeah, that it in fact might be the case.
I want to really zero in on navigation in general, and then in specific, the different kind of navigational capabilities that these animals have. So you make the statement in the book that long before human beings invented compasses, animals enjoyed ingenious built-in compasses, along with an inborn capacity to read the compass.
Don't go away. We'll be right back to pick up Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Eric Castle. Arctic terns complete the longest migration of any animal. As Eric Castle explains in his book, Animal Algorithms, in the Northern Hemisphere spring, these birds breed in the Arctic, not far from the North Pole. Several months later, they fly to the Antarctic to spend the summer in the Southern Hemisphere. Thus, they complete a round trip of 25,000 to 30,000 miles. How and why do they do that? And can the unguided, purposeless process posited by neo-Darwinian evolutionary theory actually account for this complex programmed animal behavior? Read all about it in Animal Algorithms, Evolution and the Mysterious Origin of Ingenious Instincts by Eric Castle. To receive your copy, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. The Christian Research Journal's primary commitment is to contend earnestly for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. In keeping with this commitment, the journal's mission is both evangelistic and pastoral, furthering the proclamation and defense of the historic gospel of Jesus Christ, and helping his followers distinguish between essential Christian doctrine and doctrine that is peripheral, aberrant, or heretical. In an age of subjectivism and moral relativism, may Christians ground their faith and values in the objective, reliable testimony of Holy Scripture. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today. Call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. Bertrand Russell famously said, "Most people would rather die than think, and many of them do." Not so with CRI support team members. Support team members are not only serious thinkers, but their membership in CRI's support team helps to equip hundreds of thousands of fellow believers around the globe each and every month. Are you not a member? Then you're missing out. Not only do support team members form the backbone of Christian Research Institute's outreaches, but they enjoy their selection of resources from our Equipping Essentials library and receive a complimentary subscription to CRI's award-winning Christian Research Journal, just two of the benefits of membership. To discover how you can make a difference 24/7 in equipping believers at home and abroad to stand for life and truth, check out the benefits of membership at equip.org. With over 500,000 copies in print, Hank Hanegraaff's Bible Answer books were born out of his many years of hosting the Bible Answer Man broadcast. He's taken his on-air answers to questions and chiseled them until only the gems emerge. Questions involving biblical interpretation, cults, science, ethics, apparent contradictions, and much more. This remarkable collection of concise answers is now even better. My goal, says Hank, is to take the complex and make it simple and memorable. Receive your copy of the complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition, revised and updated, as our thank you for your gift by calling 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. That's equip.org. Let's rejoin Hank Hanegraaff and his guest Eric Castle in their conversation.
You make the statement in the book that long before human beings invented compasses, animals enjoyed ingenious built-in compasses, along with an inborn capacity to read the compass. And you say they, in effect, perform these incredible mathematical computations. And in the process, you talk about pigeons and monarch butterflies and dung beetles and so forth. But these navigational processes are just spectacular, particularly when you get to the monarch butterfly. A butterfly that takes up to three generations, oftentimes, to complete the journey. And then they're able to go to the exact tree. If they're flying from wherever they're flying from to Mexico, they're able to go to the exact tree that their ancestors went to. I mean, this in itself is an incredible story of animal navigation that is hard to believe. And perhaps you can elaborate on that. Also, pigeons, and I'm thinking about dung beetles as well, who can detect polarized light from the stars in the Milky Way galaxy. I mean, this in itself is mind-blowing to me.
Yeah, it really is amazing. And when I first started reading all of this, I was just shocked that these animals have these kinds of capabilities. Having myself worked on aircraft navigation systems and knowing how complex and sophisticated they are, and then when you read about what is going on within these animals and how they're navigating, it's just astonishing, like you said, how an animal can have such a sophisticated capability. One of the examples you mentioned is the sun compass. But there's several, and we talked already about the magnetic compass, which I think most people are familiar with. A number of animals use the sun as a source for a position, which intuitively makes sense. But then they also, another aspect of the sun that a number of animals use is using the polarized light from the sun. In other words, the sun as a compass is great on a sunny day. Of course, it's useless at night. But on a sunny day where you can see the sun, yeah, you can use it. On a cloudy day, there's a problem with that. But there's a number of animals that are actually able, even on a cloudy day, they're able to detect the position of the sun. And the reason they're able to do that is because they can detect the polarization of the sun, because as the sun's rays are transmitted through the atmosphere, they become polarized. When they're first transmitted from the sun, they're completely unpolarized. People familiar with polarized sunglasses, where you use those to block out the intensity of the sun, well, something somewhat similar goes on in some animals where they're able to detect the polarization of the sun, again, through the clouds without even seeing it directly. And then based on that polarization, they're actually able to infer the direction of the sun. It took me a long time studying this to even understand how they actually, you know, in a theoretical terms, how it even works. But it's a complex process. And again, it also involves a number of aspects of mathematics. The other thing to make this even more complicated is that if you're using the sun in some way to infer a source for your navigation, you have to take into account the fact that the sun is moving throughout the day. It's not stationary, right? So animals, somehow they have encoded within their brains, they have an algorithm that they're able to actually compensate for the movement of the sun throughout the day. And there's been a number of experiments that have demonstrated this capability, that if the sun is at a certain location at 8 o'clock in the morning, an animal can detect that and use that to determine its navigation path. But then as the sun moves later, 11 o'clock in the morning, the animal knows that the sun has actually moved physically through the sky over those preceding 3 hours and actually compensate for that as it computes its navigation path. It's just amazing.
It is. And you think about the dung beetle. I mean, when I was reading about that in your book, I was astounded to read that they can detect polarized light from stars in the Milky Way and that use that as a basis for a compass. And as I'm reading this, I'm wondering, how can intelligent people believe that these kinds of navigational processes could have evolved through a blind and purposeless evolutionary process?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the big question here. When we think of systems like that that involve, and there's two aspects of it that stand out to me, being an engineer, is one is just the engineering aspects of a number of these navigation systems. There's a lot of complex engineering that has gone into how these systems have developed and how they're built into the animals. That's one aspect. The other one is, again, basically the mathematical aspect of these are algorithms. And again, and particularly in the case of navigation, they're mathematical algorithms where you're actually doing some computation. And it involves, in some cases, just simple geometry, but that's, when I say simple geometry, it's simple maybe to us, but it's not so simple for an ant. Or if you talk about other cases where you brought up the Arctic tern, some of these birds that do these really long distance migrations across the Earth, one of the things that they do is they're able to compute the shortest path. So an example I like to use for this is when you look at a flat map of the Earth, and if you're flying in an airplane from New York to Tokyo, they're roughly at the same latitude. So you would say, okay, the shortest path is just fly west. Well, when you look at a globe, it turns out that's not the shortest path, right? The shortest path that actually takes you from New York flying almost over the North Pole to Tokyo, that is actually the shortest path, and those are what we call great circle routes. Well, it turns out some of these long-distance migrating birds actually fly those same kinds of paths. They're able to fly these great circle routes, giving them the shortest distance between the starting point and the end point. So when we do that, that involves sophisticated mathematics. It's specifically spherical geometry. Well, these birds aren't doing spherical geometry like we can do, but there's some mechanism in their brains that's actually functioning the same way as if they're doing these sophisticated mathematical calculations, and we have no clue as to how that's possible.
The one thing that kept going through my head as I was reading through your book is the words of St. Paul where he says, God's eternal power and divine nature are clearly seen through what has been made, and so we are without excuse. And I think to some degree, even in an age of scientific enlightenment, we have become wretched flatlanders. We're stuck in the psycho-epistemological cocoons of our own obscurantism. We're looking at things but not seeing the brilliance in those things. And you're taking an ant and a dung beetle of all things, and through these small creatures, you're demonstrating that something majestic is going on. We're, as it were, walking through the wardrobe into Narnia. We're seeing things that suddenly we didn't see before, and I think that's so beautiful. Oftentimes, I fear, and I'm certainly guilty of this myself, that we're not outside. We don't see the majesty of God's creation.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with that. I think, speaking just for myself, as I've studied this element of biology over time, I became much more appreciative of how just the simplest things that you see every day, or at least if you're observant, you would see every day, there's aspects of design that are obvious if we only take the time to actually, you know, study it in detail. And that's one of the things that drew me to this subject, was that a lot of this research actually has only been done in the last, I'll say, 50 years, in some cases less than that, where scientists have actually taken the time to try to understand what's going on with many of these animals and how they're exhibiting behaviors such as this. Previously, people believed that, you know, animals were just all simple robots, and they exhibited, particularly these less developed animals such as insects, that these were robotic behaviors and they had limited repertoire of behaviors, and they didn't think it was that complex. Well, turns out that's not the case.
Well, we'll have to stop here for today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Join us again next time when we'll continue Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Eric Castle. Our firm commitment here at the Christian Research Institute is to defend the faith once for all delivered to the saints and equip believers to become true disciples of Jesus Christ. In appreciation for your vital gift to help strengthen and expand CRI's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches, Hank would like to send you a copy of Animal Algorithms, Evolution and the Mysterious Origin of Ingenious Instincts by Eric Castle. Call a resource consultant at 888-7000-CRI. Once again, that's 888-7000-CRI. Or visit our website, equip.org. That's equip.org. Of course, you can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded by listeners like you. We're on the air because truth matters and life matters more. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. The Christian Research Journal's primary commitment is to contend earnestly for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. In keeping with this commitment, the journal's mission is both evangelistic and pastoral, furthering the proclamation and defense of the historic gospel of Jesus Christ, and helping his followers distinguish between essential Christian doctrine and doctrine that is peripheral, aberrant, or heretical. In an age of subjectivism and moral relativism, may Christians ground their faith and values in the objective, reliable testimony of Holy Scripture. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today. Call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org.